Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with Dave Mader, Assistant Deputy Commissioner at the Internal Revenue Service. Joining us in our conversation is Jim Cook, another PwC partner.
Thanks, Paul. Dave, in any restructuring process, an organization generally has to focus on asking themselves not just what we do, but why we do it. Can you explain a little bit about how the IRS has gone about that process and what's come out of that?
Sure, Jim. I think the what we do was never in question because the IRS collects 98% of the resources that this country uses to run. And so the what was never a question. It was more the how are we going to do that task. And that's what we have been fundamentally rethinking as part of this organizational transformation. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, this focus on the customer and moving to become a customer-centric organization is sort of the how you're going to go about doing tax administration. So the focus is on the how to do it, and then how do you go about translating that theory of how to do it into practical terms so that our customers really see a difference. That, I think, is the major challenge of any kind of transformation. It's easy to design it and talk about it, but it's a lot more difficult after you implement it to really affect the change that you hope to get.
One of the other key components of the IRS restructuring process was, and you mentioned this earlier, the realignment of the functions to different locations and the IRS personnel. Tell us a little bit about how you handled that, the logistics of doing that. That's a huge effort, 100,000 employees around the country. Tell us a little bit about how you planned and managed that.
The movement of the employees from the old structure to the new structure took an incredible amount of planning on the part of the entire organization, not just the human resources professionals. It took the requirement that we understand what changes were going to take place in each of the organizational components in the existing structure, how they were going to move to the new structure, and then take it down a couple of levels below the structural change to the actual impact person by person. And we actually, during the course of the planning for the implementation, had a plan that actually showed all 100,000 employees where they exist in the old structure and where they were going to move into the new structure by location, by series, by grade. And then we just created a massive process that would, over time, and this went on for several months, move segment after segment after segment, because we wanted to make sure that when we moved 100,000 people after we did it, first of all, they were in the right place, and second of all, they were all getting paid. Mm-hmm. And we changed all of our financial codes, all of our HR codes as part of this organizational change, and I'm pleased to say that everybody got paid. We didn't miss a beat. And I don't believe that for taxpayers, they saw any change in the service that they get.
You talked about designing the change and executing the logistics of it, but how about dealing with the people through all this change? What steps did you take to deal with their anxieties and concerns as they sort of work through this process?
As I mentioned earlier, Paul, we've gone through lots of organizational change in the last 25 years, and I think we did that kind of organizational change in a very traditional way where we would pull together a group of probably primarily managers and executives, and they would come up with a change in the process or a change in the structure and work as a small group and then announce it to the workforce. You know, we're going to make this change. This was very, very different because it was going to impact everybody, managers and employees alike. There was a concern that there needed to be a heavy degree of employee involvement. So the actual design phase of this involved executives, managers, the union, employees. Everybody was involved in the design phase. And if you were selected for one of these design teams, and at one time there were about 1,800 employees working on hundreds of design teams, the responsibility of those design team members included going back one day a week to your workplace and sitting with your colleagues and explaining what was going on. That's a very different way of communicating organizational change than I think most organizations engage. Now, there were a lot of employees that were uncomfortable with that approach. It was like, well, when are these guys going to really decide what the new structure is going to look like? And, you know, they keep changing it. But the vast majority of employees felt a real involvement. They were able to watch week by week what was going on these design teams. So they could influence their colleagues. They could bring ideas to their colleagues because they knew who was working on it, and they knew that this was a very iterative process. And that's very different than the kinds of processes that we've used in the past. So it was heavy involvement across the organization and communicating. You know, constantly communicating to employees where we are in the process and as much detail as we had. And as I mentioned, for some people that was very, very welcomed. For others, it made them a little bit nervous. You know, some people would prefer just show me the final design. Don't show me how you make sausage. You know, I enjoy the product, but don't show me how to make sausage. And that's in effect what some of this organizational design looked like.
How did you balance the need for speed? Everyone advises make change quickly versus the need to collaborate and involve all the people you just described.
Part of the concern was how to affect change in the organization within a given period of time. The process that we employed actually had a requirement for periodic reports from the teams. And these teams, these hundreds of design teams actually reported their progress to the commissioner and the senior leaders. So we kept the discipline around a very, very precise project plan with very, very precise time frames. So the process was a push process. We pushed the teams along, sometimes faster than they would have liked, but we also recognized that we had to get this kind of change done within a reasonable period of time. And I think the period of time that it took us was reasonable. Were there a couple of details that remained when we moved into the new structure a year ago, October? Absolutely. But when we assessed what the risk was, there wasn't a risk to taxpayers, there wasn't a risk to employees. Was there some inconvenience to employees? Yes, there was.
During that process, you talked a lot about the internal communication. To what extent did the oversight organizations, the Congress, were they aware of the change that was being planned and as that was coming together? How did you work through that?
I mentioned the legislation, RA 98. That also had a provision that on an annual basis there would be a joint hearing by all of the various members and committees of Congress that had jurisdiction over the IRS, both in House and Senate. It's sort of unique that you would bring together both houses of Congress. That body, Finance Committee, Ways and Means, and Appropriations in both House and Senate, were monitoring our progress. Also, our stakeholders, the practitioner community, the ABA and the AICPA, all of the tax professionals were included in the stakeholder involvement. And we had, during the course of the design, several forums in which we said, here's what the design looks like thus far. Give us your input.
Several of the reforms reflect a desire to have private business models, efficiency, customer service, for example. What's your thoughts on the differences or the similarities between, you know, managing in a government context and versus, say, managing in a business context?
One of the things that I found really enlightening and fascinating as we worked our way through this process was that at least our business, the tax administration business, is very, very similar to what exists in the commercial world in financial services. As we work through with our consultant re-examination of our structure, I was really struck personally with the fact that we were probably more similar to the private sector than we were dissimilar. Yes, there are some unique rules and regulations, especially around personnel, that perhaps don't exist in the private sector, but the business practices, the procedures, how we go about collecting taxes, how we go about auditing returns, I was struck by the similarity to the private sector. And I think that's something that we all need to focus on as leaders in the federal sector. I think sometimes we've said, you know, the federal sector, we're different. I think there are differences, but I think the similarities, there are more similarities than there are differences.
Well, that's a good point for a break. We'll stop now, but come back after the break when we ask Dave Mader of the IRS about its future. Find out how it might evolve, who will work there, and what they'll be doing when the Business of Government Hour continues.